listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
Welcome on in to the Forza Podcast. It's your guy, Jordan. And tonight, I got my guest co-host, Derek Coe. Derek, what up, man?
What's good, Jordan?
Dude, it's good, man. It's a good day. So I guess I should address, Marsh announced on Twitter just a little bit ago that his dad passed away today. And that's why I got co-hosting with me. And, so condolences out to the Thomas family and Marsh and, you know, everyone affected by that loss. We're definitely thinking of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's sad news, man. So
it was rough.
Reach out to Marsh, just let him know that you're thinking about him and send your good thoughts or your prayers or, you know, whatever suits your fancy there. But we do have a pretty good show coming today. We got Damian Berry, former Hurricanes running back. So, man, you pretty excited, Co?
Oh, listen, man. Like, I love DB. I love his whole family. Like, you know, like, I've known them for a long time, man. Like, he's one of my favorite players that ever come through there. Just like his dad. You know, Obviously his younger brother Keon played there for a year. Uh-huh. But, yeah, great, great family, man. His mom, beautiful mom, like, just – good, good people all around, just good people.
Yeah. Cool, man. I'm actually, I'm excited that you're hosting with me. Cause I know that, you and Barry know each other a little bit. I'm hoping you guys' chemistry, it should make for a great interview. So I'm pretty pumped about that, man.
Good, man. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so quick podcast news. We were blowing up Twitter with it yesterday, but so, on the, Apple podcast charts, the Forza Podcast is now the 8th ranked podcast, football podcast in America. Dude, that's huge, man. I was grinning from ear to ear all day, jumping up and down in my room. It's a trip, man. So, to Kane's fam, like, I love you guys. Thank you so much. It's amazing.
It's crazy what social media can do for you. You know what I mean? It can either make or break you.
Dude, it is, man. It is. I mean, I was so this morning I was on Slam Radio, Sirius XM channel 145. I was on national radio this morning, man, and it was like in December, so just like 6 months ago, I had like 100 followers on Twitter, and now I'm on national radio, so it's crazy.
You got to love it, man. Listen, it's a blessing, just to literally, you probably never thought that you would be sitting there behind a microphone, just talking sports or like things in general. And next thing you know, you're talking on national radio. It's definitely a blessing, man. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for Brad. I'm happy for Marsh.
Yeah.
Like we were just talking earlier, man, sky's the limit for you guys, man.
Yeah, I hope. Dude, everyone in Kane's fam has been so great that I hope, I hope we have the same vibe and are able to continue on with that where, we're getting lots of people involved and everyone's having a good time and feeling the love and stuff because there's so many great people out there, man. It's Zoom calls that we're on. It's just, gosh, it's so freaking cool.
I love it, man. You build a family, you build a network, you build an empire, you know what I mean? And all you can do is be thankful, don't get too cocky, too egotistical, just be humble, be thankful. And I think that's the right way to go about it, man. When you start getting big headed and think you're bigger and better than the next person, I think that's when you get the ball that drops on your head and brings you down to reality,
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. It's good times right now. It's exciting times. We got the Garcia to the U hashtag that's blowing up. God. Had Gino Toretta tweeting that and
Brad Kaya.
What's your take on that, Co? Do you think that's gonna happen? You think he's gonna flip?
I'm a big proponent of honoring your commitment, right? So maybe because I'm a little older, I'm a little more old school. But you never know. I mean, obviously, he's shown Miami so much love over the years. Yeah. I mean, over the last year and stuff. And then, he felt like the right decision, especially being a West Coast kid, was, to commit to USC. You know, I've never been a proponent of like being afraid of competition.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously we can relate back to like obviously when I was a little younger watching the Canes play, when you literally had James Jackson, Davenport, Portis, Gore, McGahee in the backfield. Like that's crazy. And then even going back with Damian, like Damian and Miller and Mike James, like, you know, and Cooper, like it was just the competition was there. And like that just I think that builds more character for you. I think it brings out the best in you. Not saying that he couldn't come here and compete with like TVD or Nkosi or whoever's here, but I think it's a great hashtag. I think like Twitter's blown up with it. Just to see former players, former Heisman Trophy winner, tweet the same thing out, like, you know, not that it's comical, but it's interesting. You know what I mean? And again, like, how much of that does he see? Is he one of those kids who is literally like a social media diva? Or does he just kind of, you know, let it ride? You know what I mean? So I would like to see him come here because I think if he did decide to come here, him and TVD over the next 4 years, I think it just brings that quarterback room like that much tougher, that much fiercer. And, you know, that competition would just be, you know, lit up on Green Tree.
Yeah. And he would be the highest rated quarterback that we've recruited since Kyle Wright. Which is kind of mind blowing to think about it.
Oh man, and listen, man, I know Kyle, and like, oh man, you know, I felt bad for him, but again, you know, you go through four different offensive coordinators in your 4 years. It's very hard to try to get stability with an offense when things keep changing. It's changing. I don't want to say things were all his fault, but you know, again, it's different coming from a high school level playing at the college level. You know what I mean? So maybe he just couldn't grasp it. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true at all levels. So the situation, I think, I mean, imagine if Joe Burrow got selected by the New England Patriots. I mean, how would people feel about, you know, the potential of his career, right? It's it's a different thing going to the Cincinnati Bengals as opposed to playing for Bill Belichick. So, I mean, because I'm with
But what happens with that, right? So you look at, like, say, Joe Burrow. Let's take Joe Burrow. Like, he goes to Cincinnati. Obviously, Cincinnati is, I don't want to call them like a doormat program, but they're not really where they could be or where they should be or where they want to be. But like, if they go 2-14, is it on Burrow? Is it on the coach? You know, so it's like you're really put into a bad situation when you're literally a high rated, you know, player coming out of college going to a bad, like a bad team in the NFL. You know? So, I was talking to Brad about that yesterday. Like, you know, look at Brady being 199 at the end of the sixth round. Like, if Bledsoe doesn't get hurt, who knows what happens with Brady, you know? So, you never know.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, a number of things could happen. He could have, you know, sat behind Bledsoe for a long time because Bledsoe was pretty good. Or, you know, he could have bounced around to other teams where he just didn't get the opportunity. So, who knows, man. But we should probably call in Damian right now and get him on the line. You cool with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Damian, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing pretty good. You got Derek Cohen on the line.
What's going on, DC?
What's good, man?
Yep. So we welcome to the podcast. We got former Miami Hurricanes running back, former NFL running back, Damian Barry. So, Damian, my first question for you, man, we were just talking about this before we called you in, is we were talking about competition at Miami and how that's kind of bred some of our best players. Dude, in 2009, man, the running backs room was Greg Cooper, it was Mike James, it was yourself, and it was Lamar Miller, man. You got to tell us about that. What was that like, having that much talent in one position room?
Man, it was a great opportunity for each and every one of us to state our claim, you know, to show the world that we are the best running back crew. We forgot about, you know, Storm
Johnson. Yes, sir.
Forgot about Lee Chambers. So,
all correct.
I mean, we always pushed each other to be the best, you know. You know, if I get 10 yards, Coop wanted to get 12. You know, if Coop got 12, JJ wanted to get 15. And if JJ got 15. Lamar wanted to go 60. You know, he was a speedster.
Yeah, man. That's crazy. I mean, I think it's kind of underrated. Like in those years, I think we put out a lot more pro talent than most of the fans would think of. You know, probably because the record didn't match, you know, how many guys were getting drafted every year. But yeah, man. So tell us about the 2010 season when, you know, you guys came into it with some high expectations and, you know, it ended up going 7-6. Like, give us the rundown of what happened that year.
Man, a lot of miscommunication, you know, a lot of things going on with the offense. You know, we sputtered a lot, man. We had the talent, of course. We just couldn't finish the way that we would like to.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so I got a fun trivia question for you right now. So there are 5 running backs in University of Miami history to rush for 100 yards in 3 consecutive games. Can you name all 5?
It would have to be Willis McGahee, Edgerrin James, myself, Frank Gore, and it had to be Duke.
So it was, you got 4 of them. It was actually Clinton Portis was the one that you
missed. Clinton! Oh!
Yeah. Yeah. But man, I was reading up on you and I saw that stat and I'm like, dude, that's crazy. That's so cool that, you know, like that's so cool to be in that group.
Yeah, man, it's an honor to be even mentioned with those guys because, you know, those guys had long careers in the NFL,
yeah.
Hall of Famer type dudes, man. It was a great opportunity, man. If I had a chance to do it all over again, I would still choose UM, man, just because of the brotherhood and the camaraderie that we had.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, Damian, quick question for you. Obviously, you're a second generation, you know, Miami Hurricane. How did you feel playing where your dad played?
It was a different feel because I came in as a safety cornerback, correct, defensive back. It was a different feel. Like, it was like I was kind of ready just to be the next Sean Taylor, Ed Reed, you know, type dude. Figuratively, why I got the number 20. It was just.
You remember that shirt I made, right? What you know, yes, about sir, me, boy? 20 DB, boy. I'm the best RB, boy. You know, yeah. Obviously, I was around the program at the time that your dad was kind of finishing up, you know, his career. Obviously, your dad playing corner. You know, again, is that why you, like, through high school and stuff like that, wanted to play on the defensive side of the ball because of your dad? Or was that just kind of your natural given ability? Because I remember, you know, after your sophomore season and we had our spring game at Lockhart, and next thing you know, and if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but didn't you used to wear number 38?
Yeah, I started my freshman year, I wore 38 because, correct, they didn't think I was worthy enough to wear 20 yet. So
yeah, you know, and then we're at Lockhart Stadium in Fort Lauderdale. You know, we're there at the spring game, and out of nowhere, here comes this cat just like, I'm like, and we're all looking around like, who's this cat running the ball? You know, like, we didn't know who Damian Berry was at that time, you know, and then yeah, it literally just like took off for you. You know, and I think your senior year, you rushed for almost 900 yards. You know, I think right around 900 yards. I remember the Ohio State game, you know, up there in the Horseshoe. You know, like, we just nothing but love for you and your family, man. And, you know, when you transitioned from DB to running back, did you have to change anything? Like, did you have to change, like, mentally on what to do and what not to do?
I was playing running back. I was frustrated because that's not what I went to the University of Miami for. So it was a decision made by Coach Shannon. And I mean, obviously it worked out. He's a great coach. He knows that he has an eye for talent. He has a knack for talent. He actually told me that running back would be a better fit for me than DB, and I would go farther as a running back than I would as a DB. And I kind of was, you know, as a kid, you know, still a kid, as a man, but a kid, you know, you don't see the bigger picture. And I know he's already been in that round for years, so, you know, I just decided to trust him, but that didn't still, you know, soft the feeling that I was upset at, at the move, but it turned out to be a great move. I turned out to help the team, you know, a lot. So it was a great move. But every time I touched the ball, I was angry. I just thought about the move, the transition. So I just wanted to hurt anybody that was across from me that tried to tackle me.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love it. And I mean, so did you feel pretty competitive with some of the other guys that you shared the locker room with in terms of like on the defensive side of the ball? Was there any guys that you were looking for in practice when you were doing the scrimmages and stuff?
Of course.
Alan, I mean, shoot, they had Ray Ray, they had Allen. I mean, they had Buck.
Duquesne,
they had Deron Dye forced it.
Yeah,
like, they had some dudes out there on the defense, man. Jimmy Gaines, I think, was out there. Josh Holmes.
Yeah, man. Daryl Sharpton.
Yeah.
Gosh, man.
Yeah, we had a lot of guys, man. Eric Montour.
I think Colin McCarthy was there. Brandon McGee.
Yeah, Colin was there.
Yeah.
Brandon, DVD. Joe.
Yeah, rest in peace, JoJo. Rest in peace, JoJo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had a lot of guys, but the most intimidating person probably was Alan Bailey.
Okay.
He's just a freaking dancer.
Yeah, man. He was fast, you know, and he's very physical. I mean, that's not somebody you want to run into four times.
Yeah, man. I haven't thought about Alan Bailey in a minute, but I remember when I was younger, you know, reading about dude, he had like a myth around him while he was, you know, at the University of Miami. That whole story about him, like, killing an alligator when he was younger, and you know how much he could power clean and stuff like that. I remember just devouring that type of stuff, reading it on the internet. Yeah. So,
man, the dude can do anything, man. He killed 10 men with a single bound. You know,
I did feel bad for him. I did feel bad for him though, because obviously he left KC and went to Atlanta last season, and sure enough, KC ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
so, David, let me
sucks,
ask you about
man.
That. Let me ask you about that. How did that feel to win the Super Bowl? You know, what are you going through? Like, when you see those seconds like ticking down and you know that you're a Super Bowl champion.
Man, that's the most surreal feeling in the world. You know, that's a one percenter type thing that you can, you know, be actually a Super Bowl winner, to actually get to the Super Bowl and win it. And bro, the craziest thing about it is the people that I did it with, you know, Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, you know, the Haloti Nadas, you know, and then you got the Anquan Boldens, guys like Bryant McKinney, bro. Like, being able to be on that team with those guys is unreal. Nobody would believe that story if it wasn't real.
Yeah,
correct.
Being able to go to a team, play there, and then win a Super Bowl with the guy, the GOAT, Ed Reed and Ray Lewis, and they retire after that.
Yeah.
Two GOATs. Yeah.
Being
man.
Able to sit in the meeting room with Ed Reed, right next to Ed Reed, man, that was surreal, bro. It is the most amazing experience ever. The city
and you
of
guys,
Louisiana was great.
You guys beat San Fran that year, correct?
Yes.
So, and then on the flip side of that, you got my boy T Good playing on San Fran. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
I was pulling, like, it doesn't matter which one won, as long as someone from the U kind of got that ring. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, you and I have a great connection. You know, we know each other, you know. But, you know, again, I try to root for both of those teams, only because, like, and I've known T Good, you know, since, you know, he was a high school kid down here in Broward at St. Thomas.
Right.
So, you know, again, you know, that's the excitement of one end, and then the disappointment of the other end is seeing the T-Good your one.
Like, T-Good was actually my mentor coming into the University of
Miami. Baltimore.
I call him.
Well, and at Baltimore,
and
right?
At Baltimore, yep. And I actually called him Bundy, and he called me B. So, like, that's my dude. Like, you know, it was a bittersweet feeling that I beat my brother, but at the end of the day, it was like, what an amazing
you got that
feeling. Yeah, what an amazing feeling.
Yeah,
man. Well, yeah, that's great, man. That's great.
I have a question about, you know, playing on that Ravens team. So what was it like? I mean, obviously, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed were, like, they were different generations of Hurricanes, and then you being a much later generation, and also having Bryant McKinney in that mix. What was that? What's the brotherhood like in the NFL for Miami players? Like, how did you guys interact having the same alma mater there?
Till this day, I can contact each and every one of them. Till this day, I still talk to Ed. I still talk to Ray. I actually just talked to him not too long ago via text, telling him happy birthday. I talked right. to Ed not too long ago when he's doing this Instagram Live. I talked to him on Instagram
Live. He's a trip.
Yeah, man, he's doing this DJ thing. I talked to Brian almost. You know, me and Brian are a lot closer because we obviously hung together a lot in the off season and during the season. So me and him are a lot closer than, you know, the other guys. But it's love, man. It's all love being from the University of Miami. Like I said, it's like a fraternity. It's a brotherhood, a never dying brotherhood. You know, we can all depend on one another. Like, bro, it's amazing to have brothers that's going to be there for you and then hold you accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, man. From the fan perspective, like, that was always something that, I didn't grow up in South Florida. So I became a fan of Miami just because, I mean, dude, what's not to love, you know? And that was one of the things that always stuck out to me and, like, really drew me towards the program was, I mean, there's just such a palpable, obvious sense of brotherhood for the guys in the NFL. And that, I mean, that just made me love Miami so much more, you know, seeing my favorite NFL heroes just bonding over their roots, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I do have a question about when you first got to Baltimore, did they seek you out knowing that you were a Miami alum?
Repeat that question, bro.
So when you first got to Baltimore and signed with the team, did Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, and did they seek you out knowing that you were a Hurricane?
We already knew each other. You know, they come back to the school very often. So, okay. You know, they know pretty much the guys, you know. And Ed was, you know, I sat by Ed in the meeting room. Ray was actually two seats down. So it was Ed, then me, then Terrell Suggs, then Haloti, then Ray. You know, it was, I mean, what more can you ask for, bro?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, what are you doing these days? Are you coaching? Are you back in the muck? You coaching over at Glades or what are you doing right now?
Oh, I actually stay in Fort Lauderdale.
So you're by me then. Okay. I'm in Spring.
I'm in Parkland.
Well, that's where I'm at. I'm literally right on West Union University.
Oh shit. I'm right here.
Where you live at?
In Heron Bay.
Oh, dude, like, literally, you're 5 minutes from me. I'm in Heron Bay. Like, I do a lot of work in Heron Bay, Watercrest, Parkland Bay, Mar-a-Lago, you know, Parkland Golf. Like, I literally live, you know what a Target is on Westview and University?
Yeah.
By the movie theater? I'm right there, bro.
Yeah, bro. I'm right down the street from you, bro.
Man, you should have just came over here and you could have been chilling with me tonight.
Yeah, I'm right by the Walmart, man.
Yeah, dude, like literally it's 5 minutes from the crib, man. I do a lot of work over in Heron Bay. You live on the north side or south side?
I'm on the north side of Heron Bay.
Okay, yeah, because I usually come in through Hillsborough anyway.
Okay.
Dude, that's what's up. We need to link up then.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. Yeah,
who you live with? How's Kamara doing?
Oh, she's doing good, man. She actually just left. They came down. They got in the pool and stuff. Like about 4 days ago, they had a blast, man.
So, that's what's up.
You know, just chilling, man. My my girl is actually gonna move down from Brooklyn in the next couple weeks. So.
How long is your hair now?
Man, it's very long. It's very long.
Man, I think the last time I saw you was maybe last season. Yeah, I saw you and Keon and. I saw, and Kenny. You, Keon, and Kenny. Yeah, and Kenny, you all walking through the parking lots, and I'm like, "Yo, DB," you know. Same stuff, man. I've been saying for years, man.
We're gonna be we're definitely gonna catch a lot more games that I'm not in West Palm anymore.
Yeah,
so, it's pretty good, man. Just hoping that they treat the alumni a little bit better, man. Let us back on the field, you know.
Listen, man, I agree with that.
Better interactions.
Man.
I mean, it's cool to be in in the Hall of Fame room, but
in the bow camper box, whatever it is up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, but it's nothing like being in the mix, you know.
Trust me, bro. I sit right in row. I sit in row one. Ain't nothing like it.
Yep.
Yeah, man. Most definitely. So yeah, I just be chilling, bro. I coached that Pahokee last season. We went to the the semifinals, lost in the semifinals, man. We had some great kids, man, that are going off to college, you know. We did pretty good, man. Just building up the community, man. Just I'm actually working on a project now with the mayor of Belgrade to build up that community. We're so behind in times, man. It's just that time for change, yeah, man. Especially with everything going on right now.
Yeah.
It's just time for change and reform. And I work closely with one of my good friends. His name is Wendell Williams. He played out with the Texans. He was a receiver, fast guy. I work hand in hand with him with a lot of projects that we have going on, man. It's just moving, man. Just trying to get everything, you know, caught up to speed, trying to get everybody on the same page, especially with all this stuff with the pandemic and then having this this movement, Black Lives Matter, you know, it's just been crazy, you know. I mean, everyone is just need to just get on the same page, man. Everybody need to ride the wave, man. I don't see race, I don't see color, I don't see any of that stuff, man.
See, I see people.
People who they are. Yeah, you know, I judge a man by the content of his heart, you know.
Right.
So I don't see sex. I don't see race. I don't see any of that. I don't care if you like guys, if you like girls, whatever you like. I don't care what you identify as. I'm going to still love you as a person.
Yeah, that's biblical, bro. That's biblical.
Yeah. I mean,
make me get into the old preaching days.
Yeah, you know, man. We get so caught up.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. We get so caught up in the world and how it's going these days. It's just everybody just need to live, man. Just try to find what makes you happy and then you go with it, man. And that's the key thing, bro. And we got to teach our youth, man. You got to empower our youth to be the best.
Educate them.
Yes. And not only just with the stuff of, you know what I'm saying, old time. Yes, they need to know history, but teach them about credit, man. Teach them about the things that they're going to encounter in the real world order. Like, you know, in this time, you know, I understand they want to teach about, you know, all the astronauts and the stars and the stuff. Man, I don't care about no stars right now. Teach me how to get to the bag. Teach me how to get to the money. Teach me how to sustain. Teach me about mortgages. Teach me about building my credit and sustaining myself, you know, because
It's funny you say that, though, because I agree. I think, like, you know, from sophomore to junior to senior year in high school, they should start to be taught how to use a checkbook and how to financially plan and things like that. And I don't think that our education system is doing that. And, you know, obviously look at some of these young kids that come out of college early and they get this big old contract. Man, these kids don't know what to do with that money, man. You know, and they have all their boys around there, you know, all their handlers. And next thing you know, 3 years later, they broke.
Right. Right.
You know, learn how to sustain your wealth. You know, like, listen, I got boys, and I've had boys for 20 years. You know, I might throw you a bone if you need it, but at some point, man, you got to be able to fend for yourself.
No, you got it. And I think that's the main reason is because we were never taught, you know.
Correct.
You don't, I mean, if your parents don't know, and then if your parents can't teach you, we depend, because you go to school for 8 hours out of the day. You spend more time in the school than you do with your family during the school year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if we're not getting that proper education to our kids, how can you expect them to stand on their own? You know,
as a college athlete, like, your bar is set way higher too, because look, you got class, you got film, you got practice, you have games, you turn around and get back, you know, you fly back home, like, oh, after an away game, and 5 hours later, you're back in the weight room. It's like, you know, people think college athletes have it made. In reality, they don't. It's harder for them trying to manage their schedule because there's only 24 hours in that day, and you guys are literally wall to wall, like, packed. You guys are tired. Like, how did you feel during, like, after a game, like, when the next day you come back and you got to be in the weight room or you got to be in the film room? Like, you're probably exhausted.
Facts. As a college athlete, you're always tired, and you have to go to class. There's no, yo, I'm going to sleep in. They have class checkers that go to the class to make sure you're in class. All they do is walk around campus and make sure you're in class. So, you know, you'll have a 5 a.m. workout, you know, workout time that morning. And then after the 5 a.m. workout, you'll go to class. And then you, like, in the middle of the day, once your classes is done, you'll have, you know, some people have their schedule where you don't have any classes after practice, but sometimes you have a night class. Mm-hmm. But you got to understand, after practice, you're beat. After weight room, you might have the, you know, sway
trainers
to play with us. We didn't. God forbid you have an injury, so you have to go to treatment, and then you have to go to class, and then it was a business outside of a business, you know, a business that you were never compensated for.
Right. No, absolutely.
The only compensation you really get is the chance to be in the NFL.
Yeah.
You didn't have a contract with Nike, but you wore it on TV. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it was a business, man. And it's tough.
So what do you feel, Damian, what do you feel now about like the legislation that the governor just passed about now? College athletes in the state of Florida getting paid now for their likeness. 10 years too late.
It's never too late, because at the end of the day, once that movement starts, now everyone's gonna start like, hey, okay, we did this for X amount of years, and now we need some compensation.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like
I think that'll get brought up. I think former players be like, hey, look, we've been doing this. How come we're not getting compensated?
Yeah. Right. Just like the NCAA, the NCAA game, they gave out pennies, man. They gave us pennies for that. But, you know, like NFL, Madden pays you. I'll do anything.
Wow.
I'll do Madden again, you know. But, you know, it's something like, you know, it's pay the people for what they do. You know, you do so, if you're good at something, don't ever do it for free.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. The other day, Brad Kaya tweeted a picture of like a full rack of his number 15 jersey. You know, I'm not sure if it's a recent picture, if he took it back, you know, when he was a college freshman and our starting quarterback. But, you know, he posted that picture and was like, man, what I would do for 1% of these sales, you know, it probably would have been a hefty chunk of change, man.
Facts. And you got to think about it, bro. The number 20, like, bro. I wore 20 after Ed Weed. So, they didn't have names on the back of the jersey. So, like, even at the end
that
of
was
the
Randy
day,
for you. Listen, that was Coach Shannon for you. He's like, you guys aren't even putting names on your jersey. I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like,
man, he had to change that, man. Bro, I swear, we played Virginia. We got blew out. This last game of the Orange B. I was so frustrated.
2007,
bro.
Trust me, I was there.
I was upset. But the craziest thing ever, bro, as a Hurricane was we was walking back into the locker room and we heard a fan say, hey, Randy, put the effing names on the back of the jersey so we can tell who effing sucks. Bro, I was like, yo!
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
And I was just like, yo. And I was like, I can never be that, I vowed not to be that guy that sucks.
Yeah,
that was like, yo, I can, because you know, bro, they all they see is the number on your jersey at the end of the day, the number and the name, and they remember the number and the name because you wear that helmet the whole game.
So for me, I don't care if you didn't have a name on the back, because like obviously if you're a true fan, you know who wears what number, you know what I mean? It's not like one of these guys that buys a ticket, you know, oh, let me just go to a UM game and I'll just go sit in the stands and watch it, but like. Nah, yeah, that was rough. You know, there was two things that bothered me over the last probably 12, you know, 10, 12 years. Is one was that, you know, Randy Shannon stripped the names off of the players. And I never understood that. And this is a couple years after UD was like Al Golden, right? Bless his heart. I think he's a nice guy. But he wore this orange tie every week, you know, on the sideline. The man never had a University of Miami logo anywhere on him. Like, you're the head coach of the University of Miami. Like, at least your tie could have had a U on it, or your polo could have. Like those are the two things that have bothered me about coaches over the last 12 years. Like, represent. Like, you know, let the kids. The kids are playing, right? You guys were playing. Like, put your name out there. We want to know who it is. You know, and then the golden thing, not wearing like a U during on game day, it bothered me.
Yeah, I never even thought about that, but you're right about Coach Golden. I never noticed that he wasn't wearing a U anywhere, but that's right.
Crazy, right?
I never was coached by him, so my brother played under him for a minute.
Trust me, I know.
But I mean, it's a lot of things. You know, it's hard to tell somebody to stand behind the U if you're not even standing behind the U.
You ain't wearing it.
It takes a real man to wear the University of Miami orange and green, but it takes an even realer man to put that U on him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, you know, man.
That's a different statement. The University of Miami is a different statement, man. It's only two type of people in the world. Those who are Canes and those who want to be Canes.
So if you're
a true Cane, you wear that U proudly. I blame that on the administration of the University of Miami for hiring a guy that really didn't believe in the University of Miami itself.
Yeah.
I don't care.
He literally sold them a crock of crap. He came in there with his seven pillars of success or whatever he came in with there. And they literally, man, like he's like Joe Salesman from New Jersey, man. He literally came in there and sold them. He sold Eskimos ice, bro. And they just bit it.
I wouldn't just blame it all on Al, though, you know? Because at the end of the day, you're not putting Al out there to catch no balls. He doesn't have to catch the ball. He doesn't have to run the ball. So at the end of the day, it falls on us, the players, to actually do what he tells us to do. And he did a great job at Temple. One of the players that came out that came from under him was Bernard Pierce, and he was an awesome running back. Yeah. But at the same time, you got to find a coach that fits the culture and fits the students, athletes down at the University of Miami. Manny right now, he fits it. Mm-hmm. He's the perfect guy for the job. He's doing a whole reconstruction, transformation of the University of Miami that is well needed, because what we're losing now is the interest of the kids. Like, kids aren't really interested as they were in football, and it started when I got there.
Yeah.
Like, I started seeing the love for football being stripped from the kids. And you got to find a way to bring the love back. And he did it by bringing the turnover chain. Kids go wild just for the turnover chain. You got to find a way to intrigue these kids these days, because their attention spans are so short.
Right.
Yeah. So I.
Well, go ahead, Jordan. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I have a question for what you just said. You know, you said that you could see like the love of football being stripped from some of the guys. I mean, do you want to expound on that? Do you have any ideas of what was causing that?
I mean, it isn't what's causing it. It's just the world right now. Everything is so tech sound. You like back in the day, like in order to really get out of the hood, what did you have to do? You had to have a talent, do something that was worth getting paid for. If I wanted to get out, I had to play football. I'm not an engineer, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not somebody that can just sit in class for years to get a degree in being a doctor. That's not me. I would be fooling myself to say I'm going to be a lawyer. Yeah, I would be fooling myself to say, okay, I'm going to sit and do five more years to become an attorney and then take another test and pass this test, you know, and then hope that I can be a high paid attorney. That's not me. That wasn't my route. So I think that right now it's just the technology is changing. You know, I recently, while I was coaching that program, I had a kid quit. He told me, he was an old lineman, told me, coach, I don't want to play football no more because I'm just going to do YouTube. I'm going to cut grass on YouTube.
Wow.
You know, there's so many ways, so many avenues right now to actually get paid and not have to do that much work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. Man. I mean, look at Jordan. Jordan's doing a podcast. You know, I mean,
I ain't getting paid yet.
Doing a podcast. It's on its way, you know. It's just find what you do, you know. Yeah. Find what you do and do it well.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's great insight, though. I never really thought about it that way, but I mean, that totally makes sense, you know.
Damian, being a running back at the University of Miami, can you list your top three running back all time at University of Miami?
Top three of all time, University of Miami.
Correct. I'm talking about Damian Barry, number 20, you know, former starting running back at the University of Miami. give me your top three running backs that that came through Miami.
You know, I would be wrong not to say Edgerrin. Ooh, top three. Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm gonna do Edge. I'm gonna do Willis. can I do at least five?
You can do five.
Go for it.
Okay,
I'll do five. I would say Edge. I would have to say Frank Willis, Lamar, and Baby J.
So I love Javaris James. He was just different. He wasn't the fastest guy, I loved the way he ran. Javaris, I would have thought you would have probably threw Duke in there just because of, the records and the stats. Uh-huh.
It was Duke's team. It wasn't like what I had to go through Lamar or what Javaris went through. If we're getting the ball 100 times a game, hell yeah, we get those stats.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
He's a great athlete. Hell yeah. Duke is a great runner, but he didn't come in with the guys like we had, And he had a game plan just for Duke.
Right. And so you mentioned somebody, and if Jordan, if you don't mind, I'll touch on this real quick. You said Frank Gore. Like, look at Frank Gore as a third all-time leading rusher in the NFL history, who at 37 years old is literally still playing running back in the NFL. Like, that just blows me away because, the running back tenure at the NFL is probably on an average of what, 3-4 years? Would you think that's an accurate assessment?
Right.
Man, you're talking somebody in there for 17 years.
You're absolutely right, bro. You're absolutely right.
And one of the most humblest guys you will ever meet in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, gosh, man. Yeah, that's what makes the you special. Look at Edge. Edge going into the Hall of Fame this year. He should have been in there years earlier, but he's finally getting into the Hall of Fame. Jimmy Johnson going into the Hall of Fame. Look at the next couple years. Hopefully Vince Wilfork, Hall of Fame. Andre Johnson, Hall of Fame. Frank Gore, whenever he finally decides to retire in 5 more years, the Hall of Fame. It's amazing to see what the University of Miami, what they produce and what they put out. And not just on the field, but off the field too, man. Like, they have great guys in the community giving back. Talk about yourself going back to coach high school football.
Yeah.
To put in the work and teach younger kids, hey, look, I've been here. I've done this. Trust me, watch what I do. This is the mistakes that I've made. Don't make these same mistakes, So it's empowering to see, someone like yourself and other people at University of Miami giving back into the community, So I appreciate you doing that, bro.
Yeah, man. It needs to be done, and done the right way. I mean, I'm sick of the coaches, the half-ass coaches,
Yeah.
You can't do that to kids, man. People just coaching for a paycheck, Mm-hmm. And I was actually talking to one of the guys, one of my old friends. I was talking to Brandon Harris, and I was telling him because he always he's at FSU now. He always invites me to the coaching clinics and stuff like that. And I was like, bro, guys, it's a difference. Like, guys like me and, we have to go the long route. Like, coach high school, then build their way up to, to college. And then, some people have, that end, have a best friend that so happened becomes a coach. And then they get there.
They pull you in.
Yeah. So I was like, and I don't mind going the long route. Like, I've been going the long route my whole entire life. So, if it's for me, it's for me. If it's not, it's not, So I'm just going to continue to pour into the lives of the younger community, the younger kids, and continue to build them up, until that day comes where I'm a college coach or, potentially an NFL coach. But if that's not my route, that's not my route,
But at least you can use your platform to put yourself out there. Obviously, you played college ball, you played in NFL, you know. So yeah, so what? You got to start at the bottom to work your way up. Is that your long term goal? Is to try to coach in college and then potentially coach maybe at the NFL level?
Man, I just want to be able to change the world.
Gotcha.
One play at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
That's pretty sick. So.
That's the.
Yeah, I got just a few more questions before we wrap things up here. Just going back to your playing career real quick. I'd love to hear your favorite game as a Miami Hurricane and your least favorite game as a Miami Hurricane.
My favorite game as a Miami Hurricane was the 2009 season when we played Duke at home. We was down, and I actually got in the game, and I got a couple big first downs, and then the crowd just started chanting, Barry.
Barry, Barry. Yeah, I remember Barry. That, man. I remember that game.
That game was, you know, that's amazing to me to have over 90,000 people screaming your name and, you know what I'm saying, having your family there to hear it, to witness it. It's a surreal feeling, man. It's you know, I can't even call it, man. That's by far one of the best, you know, best memories from the University of Miami.
Mm-hmm. And how about your least favorite game?
Oh man, I had a lot of those.
Boom.
give us two or three then.
Okay, I'll give you two. My least favorite game would have to be my number one least favorite game would have to be losing in the Orange Bowl the last game, 48-0.
Yeah.
That's my least favorite. And then going up to we went up to play Tyrod Taylor in the Virginia Tech Hokies. Mm-hmm. We went up there, it was sunny all day.
Then it rained.
Game time was a 99% chance of rain, and it was like 40,000 below zero. Man, that was the coldest game I ever played in my life. And we got scraped.
Yeah. I remember that game too, man.
Yeah, that always makes it worse, bro. I'm telling you, a lot always makes it worse.
Yeah. It's
nothing like losing and being cold at the same time. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's horrible, bro. It's horrible.
So on Monday we had LaVon Ponder and Bruce Johnson on the podcast and both of them said
Bruce, man, they were
25.
Yeah, they're fantastic, man, and they both agreed that Virginia loss, you know, last game of the Orange Bowl was their worst favorite, you know, their least favorite game as well, and that, man, it just hurts, man. That's I'm just some random fan, right? But I remember hopping on the bus to go to middle school. I was in like seventh grade or something, and just like staring at the box score all morning on the bus, you know, just like depressed, man.
It's going to change. Yeah. I already know the feeling.
Yeah.
I came, man. Like watching the Ohio State game, really, you know what I'm saying? That messed me up a lot when we lost to Ohio State. Back in 2001.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really nice.
I was there.
Of course you were.
Sorry, man. I was there, and then, you know, obviously, like, I got hooked up. Like, so I had bought tickets. 2010, we had went to the shoot, and I had bought tickets in the upper deck, you know, but I was fortunate to know some people who ended up getting me, you know, some family tickets, and being able to sit like in the third row, you know, in the horseshoe, watching them boys play, even though we didn't have the outcome that we wanted. And I really think we could have beat them that day. You know, it was good. Like Damien hooked me up with some tickets. Remember that, D?
Chill. Don't be telling everybody we that close, bro.
It don't matter now. Yeah. You're not a student athlete. But you know, again, like, you know, it was good, man. You know, like, you know, the good thing is you start to build relationships, you build friendships, man. And you know, as a fan, you know, we all want to be like accepted and known by a lot of players, you know what I mean? And it's always nice just to be able to interact and engage with former, you know, student athletes, even like here it is, you know, 10 years after you've been at the University of Miami, and, you know, yet you and I still chop it up when we see each other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it's always good to know like that some people appreciate the hard work, you know,
yeah,
that you put in, bro, as a player, because it is hard, man. You know, people really don't really get to see, you know, the hard work that's put in. All they see is the production on Saturdays and Sundays and Mondays and Thursdays. But yeah, it's a lot of stuff goes on between those days, bro.
You know, and real fans should really, like, you know, appreciate whether you win or you or lose. It shouldn't be about the score. It should be about the individual, and it should be about the team. You know, just as we get all hyped up and we congratulate when we win, it should be the same way when we're losing too, man. You know, still got to show support. You know, I hate these fans that want to bounce with, like, you know, 8 minutes to go in the game and maybe we're down by 7 or 14. You know, man, it's college ball. You never know what can happen, man. That's why I don't leave until literally the cops are flashing their blue lights telling me I got to leave the parking lot. You know, like, I try to get that whole experience in, you know, and, you know, moving forward, you know, I hopefully my kids, you know, obviously, like, they go to games and I want them to do the same thing that I'm doing now. Like, when I'm 80, you know, hopefully I'll be doing the same thing with them, but just maybe I'll be in a wheelchair at that point. I'm not sure, but, like, that's my goal, man. I wish more people would really support these young men, win or lose.
Yeah. Man, I hope that we can see that a little better. I mean, I'd be lying if I said that I was never guilty of it. You know, I was pretty outspoken about a certain quarterback that we had this last season. But you know, I mean, you're right. And I think more fans need to adopt that perspective, myself included, in that, you know, at the end of the day, like, I mean, I'm only 26, and, like, most of the guys play, or I guess all of the guys playing for us at this point, are younger than I am. And, dude, I have no idea what's going on in my life still, you know, so to put so much pressure on these 18, 19, 20, 21 year old guys,
correct,
just doesn't make sense, man.
Correct.
You know, like, I still want people to take it easy on me.
Right. Bro, but, you know, that's what builds it, you know. That's, but when you expect something from a team, and I don't fault you for leaving, because there's been games that I haven't been in and I wanted to go in the locker room. But, you know, it's a lot of things. Like, when you expect greatness from something or someone, that's what you expect. You hold that team to a higher, you know, standard than everybody else. This is not how we are supposed to lose. The University of Miami is never supposed to go now. Yeah. That's not what you're used to. That's not what you're accustomed to. And I would not settle for, you know, being, you know what I'm saying, blown out. You know, like, bro, you gotta remember, I came from high school, bro. We never got blown out at Glade Central. But then again, we had, like, Deontay Thompson, Travis Benjamin all on one team, Brian Mann. Like, we had a lot of guys on one team. So I went to the University of Miami after having a 12-3 record in high school, you know, my senior year, to 7-6 and 5-6, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah, not used to that.
It definitely not, you know. So, you know, you just gotta take it everything that you do, you just gotta do it to the best of your ability. And I feel like if everybody in University of Miami's team this year does everything to the best of their ability, there's no way we will fall short of being great.
Yeah, man. So I'm curious, you know, piggybacking on what you just said, what was your low point for last year's Miami Hurricanes season? Like, at what point of the season did you feel your absolute lowest as a fan and as an alumnus?
I mean, it's hard because I know it's been a couple games, like, you know, it's been more of a we'll get them next time type of feeling, because I know I can name a couple games that I've made mistakes in, and I know that I could have sealed the deal, like 2010 in the South Florida game. I fumbled at the 1 yard line, you know, reaching for the goal line, you know. Ohio State, you know, I mean, Ja'Cory threw an interception, but I could have ran the route better, you know. There's a lot of things that I look at before I judge. It's like, how did, you know, Ed and them feel when I was playing there, you know? So I don't fault the kids for, you know, losing the game or, you know what I'm saying, or a fumble, because that's all a part of the game. That's what makes football great.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Damian. It was awesome hearing your stories, and you know, just we appreciate you, man. I hope that everyone listens to this and then, you know, goes and watches some of your highlights and you know, just remembers some of the other great players that we've had recently. So, thank you so much for coming on, man. And is there anything that you wanted to plug real quick before you head out, or are we good?
You know, I coach at Pogey. We're still, you know, still building. You know, we're under DJ Bolden. We can still use donations or whatever you guys have. It doesn't matter. You know, just reach out to me via Instagram, dberry20, or Twitter, dJberry20. Just get at me, you know, anything. It doesn't matter the numbers. Just helping the kids, you know. I mean, we get a lot of support from Anquan Bolden. We get a lot of support from the older Pahokee players, the older Blue Devils. You know, Rabbit helps out a lot. Janaris Jenkins, Pernell McPhee, you know, those guys. But I would like to see us all, you know, donate to a cause greater than ourselves, you know. Because, you know, college, high school coaches really don't do it for the pay. It's pennies, sure. You know. So, that'd be great if y'all guys can donate. Doesn't matter the amount. I mean, and then again, we have the Men of Valor that we run, which is, you know, 500 kids coming out. We're teaching them about God and sports and how to be a player that can put faith, family, football all into one perspective, you know. So it's all good, man. It's just trying to get everybody on the same page, building up this community as a whole, one play at a time.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Hope you have a good day, man.
I appreciate you having me, bro. Anytime.
Yeah. Appreciate you, D.
Yep. Cool. Go all Canes, right. Man.
I'm going to give Derek my number, man. Holler at me, Derek. Hit me up.
Yeah, I got you, bro. I will. Okay. I'll get your number from Jordan.
Cool. I'll make sure he gets it, bro.
All right. Appreciate you, fellas. Yeah, have a great night.
You too, D.
Cool. Dude, that was a great interview, man. I'm, that was great. Dude. Yeah, I loved it. So, sheesh, man, that's cool that you and Damian go so far back. You know, I think, you know, we're still rolling on this thing, but I think when everyone's listening to it later, they're going to appreciate that. It's you know, for a little bit, I just kind of sat back and let you two go at it. It was good stuff, man.
You know, I go back with his dad too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I used to be a youth pastor, you know, years and years, years ago. And then, his dad is, like a bishop, and, you know, his dad, they have a church up in Belglades, and, you know, his dad's a bishop and, you know, just spreads the word of God. And I was fortunate. Yeah. They were doing, I think it might've been Damian. They were doing a football camp, or maybe it was Damian and his dad. They were doing a football camp up in Belglade. And, they had called me to come up there and speak in front of, you know, all the kids at the camp, which, you know, how you were talking about this morning, how, like, you know, you get a little nervous, you know, and I've spoken in front of a lot of people and stuff before, but, like, you know, here it is, you get, like, you know, 300-400 kids and you're over there just talking, you know, sometimes it can be a little surreal. Like, what do I say?
Yeah.
You know, but you got to keep it light. You got to keep their, you know, you got to keep their attention. It's crazy how, like, Damian just mentioned about, like, you know, how people just, like, when he was at the end of his career there, how people, like, they were losing the love of football. Like, I would have never even expected that. Like, that was kind of, like, mind-boggling to me to hear that.
Yeah, me too, man. That was a fantastic interview. I love that he was telling us, you know, about the stuff that's going on in his community over there in Belglade and you know, the work that he's putting in. And it's cool stuff, man.
That was great, man. How did you end up linking up and picking him, or how did you get in contact with him?
You know, it was actually Marsh that set that up, and then, you know, he kind of just passed the reins off to me this morning, you know, had his family stuff come up, and you know, his dad's passing. So, You know, it was today was actually the first time that I spoke with Damian, but so you'll have to ask Marsh when you guys communicate next time. So
yeah, no doubt. You know, and again, moving forward, man, it's like, you know, that's the type of stuff that you want to do. You want to try to get, you know, it'd be cool to get current players on, but like, you know, you get the old school guys on there, you know, even going back in the earlier 2000s, you know, man, just the stories that they could tell you about just the locker room and, you know, the excitement. Like, you know, I'm friends with like the twins, Jarrell and Jamel Weaver, you know, who played at Northwestern. Like, they're just, they're good. They're funny dudes, man. You know, like, one of my good friends, his name, Carl Walker, he played on the 01 team. I'm playing more special teams, but, you know, again, like, you know, these are like my boys that I can, like, you know, hey, you know, you'd like to talk some Canes football. Like, what do you feel? And, you know, obviously they, most of them still go back and, you know, they kind of a little bit incognito, you know, they kind of blend in with the crowd and not a lot of people like know who they are and stuff, but like, and it's great to just catch up with some of these older guys that, you know, you went to the games and watched them play and, you know, you build relationships with them, man. That's fantastic.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's fun. I love hearing the small stuff, you know, cause, I've told this on the podcast a few times, but you know, like when I really, really started to just, I guess when my love for Miami was really being strengthened and it was like the most important time of my life as a Miami Hurricanes fan was, you know, when I was in like middle school and I didn't really have a lot going for me, at least in my mind. Dude, I just would read about these players all day. You know what I mean? It's like Miami football was everything. So now hearing like the little ins and outs of the, you know, the stories from Green Tree and stuff going on behind the scenes, man, it's just, it's cool. And I honestly love hearing the stories from the Shannon and the Golden Era, you know, almost more than anything. Cause that's, you know, that was when I was younger and
kind of get into it, huh?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I know I'm in the minority there. I love,
no, but there's nothing wrong with that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's when, my fanhood was really, really strengthened, was like the Ja'Cory Harris and Stephen Morris years, man.
Yeah.
It's, we had to take our lumps as a fan base, man, but that just, I thrive in adversity though. So.
I mean, that's the way to look at stuff, man. You know, like when, you know, you know that term pressure bust pipes, you know what I mean? Like, you know, when things get thrown at you, man, it's either you can bend, you can break, or like you can grab the bull by the horns and, you know, and go forward.
Yeah.
And I think like, man, I keep bringing this up, and I said this the last couple of days, like I'm so excited about what's going on at the University of Miami, like this year, you know, like with Manny not really doing, not saying anything, not doing anything, just putting the work in. And I think the players are just buying into that. You know, like, you know, last year I think it was all gimmicky, right? And then this year, like, there's no gimmicks. It's literally, this is what we're doing. Okay, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone. Okay, I'm gonna do some research, and I'm gonna hire you, I'm gonna hire you, I'm gonna hire you, and let's get this train rolling. And then again, you know, you see it through the portal, you see it through, you know, people recommitting. It's like something's brewing, you know. Again, you still got to put it out on the field, but something definitely is brewing.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you're right about the excitement. You know, it is hard to separate. I was actually talking about that on Slam Radio this morning with Larry. You know, he just wanted my take on why it's different. And, you know, I mean, if you're giving an objective answer, it's not different. It's just the feeling is different, which is hard to quantify. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's
right.
People are like, well, you were just as hyped. And it's like, yeah, I was, but it is different this year, though. And I hope, man, I can be a doomsdayer sometimes, but I'm hoping that we're not being duped again, man.
Well, I mean, obviously, like you say, I want to see what we do against Temple, right? Like, literally, you should be Temple by 25 points. Right? If you go out there and literally you just lighten them up and say you win by 40, 50 points, okay, now my eyes are open, all right? But then you got Wagner, whether or not they decide to come or not, that could be a whole different ballgame. You got UAB, you know, and then all of a sudden you go to Michigan State. If you roll through that and you're 4-0 and you're coming back, and your schedule is pretty favorable, like, who's to say that you literally can't run the table? And next thing you know, like, you you know, that train can be rolling. Then you'll see all the bandwagon fans hopping on, and yeah. you know, you'll see the stadium kind of get, you know, filled yeah. and like, really, but where were you the first couple games? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, it's we shall see. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, man.
That should be the hashtag. We shall see.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, the two most important positions in football, arguably, is quarterback and pass rush. And
we're loaded.
Dude, so, if you look at those two positions in college football as a whole, and you say, like, which guys in college football at those positions are, like, absolute lightning in a bottle? I mean, Greg Rousseau is at the top of the list, and De'Eriq King is on the short list. So it's hard not to be excited, man. I mean, because those guys are absolutely lightning in a bottle.
They're monsters.
Like, they are.
They're definitely monsters. And again, so when you look at, and we've talked about this, you look at that D line, you look at, and it's not just the starting D ends and the starting tackles. It's the depth behind what we finally have,
yeah,
where we've been missing for years is literally, even going back to the linebackers, we just never had any depth, you know?
Yeah.
So you're telling me, are you starting Rousseau and Roche, you know, Roche? Are you starting Phillips and Harvey? Like you have Blissett, you know, you have Elijah Roberts. Like you have so much mixture now that literally, you know, you have Williams. Like you literally have all these guys now that they don't need to play 60, 70 plays a game. You know, you have the depth to keep them fresh. You know, and the good thing is, too, like, if you can get up early. So this – I've always been a proponent of not keeping your starting quarterback in a game when you're up 42 to nothing. Like, just – so – because what happens is you get an injury to, say, person, and now you have nobody who has game experience. Man, literally, if you're up 30 to nothing, pull your quarterback, get your second team in there. Let them run. Let them see what they can do, because eventually, through an injury, whatever, an ejection, who knows what can happen. You're going to need some other people to step up.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. And, dude, could you imagine being, like, an opposing offensive lineman, like a tackle? And, you know, if you're running, like, a no-huddle offense and you're on, like, your 14th play in a row without taking a break, and then they sub in Jafari Harvey or Jalen Phillips, and then you have to go against those guys being fresh, that would be horrible.
Oh, my gosh. But, I'm telling you, bro. It's
Yeah.
Ooh, could be a little tricky.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. There's big things coming, and I mean, I say it every week, but I think I'm speaking for, you know, the whole Canes family, just belaboring this point of, like, there's so much potential. The ceiling is just sky high this season. I would not be shocked if we make a big splash.
I think we can. I mean, I literally think that we could literally, I don't want to say, I hate the phrase, let's shock the world, right? But I think there could be a point where literally you got nothing but people talking about you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, and the schedule's favorable. You know, I mean, it's not crazy to think that we could go into the ACC championship game playing Clemson with only like one loss or so, one or two losses. Maybe even zero.
And listen, if you're at that point and you have maybe one loss or no losses, like literally, you should be in the playoffs, win or lose. You know what I mean? Depending on what the outcome. But I don't see Clemson. So Clemson lost Justin Ross for the season. So so their main receiver. Now I'm not saying that they don't have depth at receiver, but like even if you watch a game, like watch a lot of the games last year, like Trevor Lawrence really didn't have the greatest season. And again. Yeah. I think their scariest person is Travis Etienne. Like he's just a stud, man.
Oh yeah.
You know, and so let's talk about this. Here it is, Travis Etienne, Najee Harris. Like you look at some of these all pro kids and, you know, all Americans, blah, 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 and decide to return for their senior year of college at a high prolific school. Yeah. But yeah, we want to have our underclassmen leave to go undrafted. Like I don't get it. I just don't get it.
It doesn't make sense. There's nothing to get, man.
Trust me, I don't get it, man.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating, man. I do think that's the difference between us and a great program is, you know, I mean, we just in the past 5 years, even though we've had some decent teams, like, our depth has really been hurt by that exact thing. I mean, could you imagine if we had Kendrick Norton and RJ McIntosh come back? And, I mean, I can't even think of the other guys that left early. But, I mean, there's been so many different times. I mean, we might not have gone 7-6, and then we might not even have had Coach Rick leave. And who knows if that would be for better or worse.
Well, even go back in the early 2000s. I mean, yeah. if Portis doesn't decide to leave early, then McGahee really doesn't get on the field. But, like, as I say that, if Frank Gore doesn't blow out his knee, maybe McGahee doesn't even get a shot to get on the field either. So, you know, again, that's why I go back to having that depth, you know, because you need that. You never know. You know, look at, like, Shockey. Even though, you know, Kellen Winslow had a great game and great season, like, I don't really think he was Shockey. You know, what happens in 2002 against Ohio State if we have a Clinton Portis, where when McGahee, you know, when he blows his knee out, we're not relying on, like, a Jared Payton to run the ball. You know, not taking nothing away from JP, but again, it was, he's not the type of caliber of running back that the Portis, the McGahees, and the Gores were, you know? Yeah. So you lose that, you know? There's just so many, man, that you can go back and say, you know, why did you leave? You shouldn't have left. And, oh, man, I don't know why you were even thinking about leaving, you know? And in the last couple of years, it's been really prevalent with these underclassmen who just, you know, they leave early, and then next thing you know, they're out of football. And, you know, like, are you coming back to get your education? Like, that's always been one of my biggest things is, why not come, unless you're like a first round pick, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Like, so let's say Brevin this year blows up and he's a solidified first round pick. You know what? You take that gamble and you go bank. Right. But if you're not projected to be, if you're projected to be a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounder, why not come back for one more year? Why not have everything given to you as a college athlete, you know, maybe build up your draft status and go from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, we had Brad Kaya on the show and he talked about his experience. So, you know, maybe it's not the same, like, the same scenario for everybody, but I feel like for most guys, I mean, you're probably right. You know, it's just puzzling. It's puzzling to say the least.
I don't, you know, from my understanding is someone told him that, you know, he was somewhere in the third round range, you know, but you literally have to stop believing what people tell you.
Yeah.
You really need to get insight from, like, legitimate GMs and legitimate feedback on what they tell you. And then, you know, again, you're going to make the decision you're going to want to make, but, like, I think Brad would have benefited one more year being, you know, coming back for his senior year. You know what I mean? So
yeah, he's kind of explaining, you know, that his dream in college, and, you know, I don't want to retell this the wrong way. So I hope I don't butcher it, but, he made it sound like he was, interested in doing a film degree and just said that he couldn't get it done while he was a player. So he decided to leave early, so he could come back to University of Miami, get his film degree, and then just have, like, two different career options in life, you know? So, yeah. But who knows, you know? That's I always thought that story was kind of cool. And, dude, honestly, I'm a huge Brad Kaya fan. I was from day one. It's been a trip having him on the show twice and, you know, chatting with him here and there. So he's a cool guy, but...
Yeah, he's definitely a good dude.
Yeah, I'm like the biggest Brad Kaya stan in the world. So.
Yeah, I remember him because I was fortunate enough to build the Schwartz Center, right? I was the lead electrician to build the Schwartz Center, which includes, like, the player locker room and, like, the, you know, the trophy room and whatever, the whole building. So I remember Brad coming through on his walk, like, on his visit, you know, kind of touring the Schwartz Center. That's where I first met him at, and then. You know, then he had checked into, coming to Miami, and then they had a Canes Fest, and we were down there on Green Tree with the Schwartz Center being opened, and Brad's literally walking down, like, the side of the Schwartz Center. No one really even know who he is. I mean, obviously I do. So I have a picture with my kid, with Brad. You know, here he is, an 18-year-old kid, you know.
Yeah.
And I got my two kids, you know, with pictures with him, you know what I mean? And then
yeah,
he's just a good dude, man.
Yeah, he is, man. It's It's cool stuff, man. And I guess we should probably wrap this up. We've been rambling forever now. But hey, Co, I appreciate you coming on and filling in for Marsh today. And dude, we need to get you on more, man. It's you do my job better than I do. So.
Listen, man, I told you guys are doing a phenomenal job, man. I'm just here to help you guys, whatever you need to facilitate, you know, if somebody can't make it or whatever, look, whatever you guys need, man, I'm down for it, man. I just want you guys to succeed. I want you guys to do well. I want you guys to keep climbing them rankings, you know, and then again, I'm just here to help whatever you guys need, man.
Cool.
It definitely was fun though, especially talking with DB, you know, he's a good dude. So don't forget to shoot me his number.
I will as soon as we hang up, man. But, anyways, thank you, and again, you know, shout out to Marsh and his family. And,
yeah,
I know absolutely. I speak for both of us, and just, geez, man. But everyone send their love, you know.
Absolutely, man. Well, listen, you have a good night, man. And like I said, if you need anything else, you know, hit me up.
Absolutely, thank you, Co. I appreciate it. But go Canes.
Right, go Canes.